You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 15th, 2011. This is episode 188, Wells Hacker, Photos and RSS. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your host, and I'm happy that you're joining us once again for a continuation of our Wells Hacker series. Good morning, Sally Draper from, well, I don't know where you are because we're pre-recording this, and you're probably maybe back in Sleepy Eye at this point.
By now, I've made it to Mackinac Island and back.
Okay. So, that's right. Yeah. Via Camp Phillip, too.
That's right. I'm wearing my white hat this morning, Martin. What about you?
I am, too, and I'm actually in Florida. I think that would be the date that that we pick for this airing of the show. So we're doing a little bit of pre-recording, and there's my phone ringing. So why don't I put that on Do Not Disturb, where we can continue uninterrupted for this discussion of tips and tricks that you and I have put together over the course of this summer to hopefully enlighten and help out our listeners in with certain areas of technology. And I guess I'm learning a lot through this series. I'm doing a little more deeper research in some areas that maybe I've used but wanted to get a little bit smarter on. And I'm really helping myself maybe more than our listeners and through the tips and tricks that we're pulling together for this series.
Yep, I agree. I'm learning as I have to explain it to others. It always makes you a little bit brushed up on things. And I'm learning from yours as well, Martin. Looking forward to each week and what you have to teach me there. Yep. So,
well, I started last week, so you get to start this week with your Wells Hacker article.
All right. Well, mine this week is called Organize Your Digital Photos. And this kind of sprung from the need on my part. We went digital probably in about the year 2000. I remember taking pictures on New Year's Eve of 1999, you know, waiting to see what was going to happen when Y2K finally arrived. And from that point on, I think we've pretty much been 100% digital. So my kids have really never experienced developing film and then being disappointed that you paid money for the film and you didn't get the pictures that you wanted.
Right.
You know, they've pretty much always had, I called it in my blog post, a happy trigger finger on my camera button, you know.
And expensive, too, you know, to go that traditional route, too.
Exactly. So. And so now with digital imagery and even digital photos on my iPad now, the sky's the limit, kind of, with what you can do in terms of instantly seeing your pictures, making sure you got the photo that you wanted and retaking as many times as you want, and then being able to do all kinds of editing and things like that with different tools that you have. So digital photography has just really exploded. And with that explosion comes an explosion of files that you need to manage. So that's really what I'm focused on with my tip this week, is how I personally manage and organize all my digital photos. And it's a really simple method, but it works very well for me. And that is basically a directory structure that I impose as I take the photos off my camera. I always start each year by creating a directory for that particular year. So this year I started in January with a 2011 directory in my pictures library. And underneath that directory, then I make a series of directories for each month of the year. And I title them with a two-digit numeric representation of the month, so 01 for January, 02 for February. And then after that, I also include in the directory title the description of the month. So my full folder name is 01-January, 02-February, that kind of thing. I find that if I just put the numbers, it's a little bit harder for my brain to process. Now, what is August? Is it 8 or 9? You know, and so I actually spell it out, but by putting the digits first, then I force the sort to be in the actual month order, as opposed to just giving it the title of the particular month, and it would be an alphabetic sort then. So when I open up my 2011 folder, all I see are 12 subfolders, one for each month of the year. And then throughout the year, as I take photos, I go into the particular month when I'm ready to download them to my computer, and I create a subdirectory for each event that I photographed. So maybe it was my son's birthday party or a particular event at church or whatever it might be. And each of those, again, I include a numeric two-digit number at the beginning representing the day of the month that I took the photos. So maybe it was on the 15th that I took my son's birthday picture. So it would be 15-John's birthday or whatever the title might be. So again, I get a representation. I get it sorted in the order of the days of the month. And then I get a description that helps jog my memory as to what the photos are of for that particular day. Some days I have multiple events, so I'll have a couple of them that are numbered 15 with different descriptions or whatever. And over time, I've done this literally since the year 2000. This is how I've organized my digital photos. And I almost always can think, oh, I think that was the year 2003, and it was in the fall, and I can drill down in this directory structure and be able to pinpoint pretty accurately and bring up photos based on storing them this way. So
right.
It's been a real positive thing for me. It's easy to write them to a CD or a DVD and retain that directory structure so that my archives, you know, are easy to search and that kind of thing. So that's it. Pretty simple, but a powerful tip for me in terms of photo organization.
Nice. A couple things I like about this. One is you kind of have a running history of your family's life and your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could go into any one of these and kind of see the events, you know, that have transpired, what days they were on and so forth, not just the raw footage or the pictures, you know, themselves. I like that. What do you use to view and, you know, manage your library? Do you just use the regular Windows Viewer, or how do you use anything like iPhoto or Windows Picture View or something like that?
I've tried different things, Martin, and I'm just happy with the Windows Explorer Viewer. And a lot of times I'm basically opening things up for editing or whatever in some type of software, like Snagit is one of my favorite simple photo editors. And so just being able to have them organized by that directory structure and pull them up that way is all I do. I've tried Picasa. I'm not in love with that.
Right.
I just like to keep it simple and just work within my directories.
Yeah, the other thing I like about this is that it's a standard structure that you could use some of these tools if you want, but if you decide not to continue using them, you still have your organizational structure to fall back on, and you know it just lives on. So
I'm not dependent on Picasa or whatever to think for me and do the organization structure. I put my files where I want them, and then I know where they are when I want to access them.
Yeah, so. very structured approach.
Imagine that.
But I like it. I think this makes a lot of sense, and it makes it easier to search too. So if you're descriptive in your folder naming, you can really find. You know, find that those spelling bee photos or graduation photos or whatever. So
exactly.
Very nicely done.
Yeah.
All right. My blog post this week was about Google Reader, which is probably, besides Outlook and Gmail perhaps, the app I use most frequently. And in our lines of work, Sally, we need to kind of stay up to speed and up to date on news and different topics, whether they be technology or ministry related. And I think most of our listeners probably have similar needs to kind of stay up on what new is out there and new articles and so on and so forth. And, you know, long gone are the days where you need to keep a list or a bunch of favorites or bookmarks on your browser and visit those sites and see if there's something new. Via the power of RSS. And because most content on the web is now RSS enabled, you can use tools like Google Reader to bring all that content to you. to aggregate that in one convenient view. And both you and I think have talked about the great benefits of using a tool like Google Reader. And Google Reader just keeps getting better and better. And again, that's why I spend a lot of time in it. But there are some things that you could do to even improve the Google Reader viewing experience, and that's really the subject of my blog post. First off, I would highly recommend, and I state this in the blog post as well, that if you're going to use Google Reader, it's best to use it in the native Google browser called Chrome. The two are made for each other, and I've actually tried Google Reader in Internet Explorer, even in Firefox, and the performance isn't as good, imagine that, as it is in Chrome. And it seems like they work nicely together. It's a little snappier. You get some features that you don't get. And one of those features, one of those add-ons that you get through Chrome that you can add to your Google Reader viewing experience is something called Super Google Reader add-on. And what this simply does is it adds a couple, three tabs to each blog post. And on those tabs, once you have the add-on installed, you have three tabs. One of them is called Readable, one of them is called Link, and one of them is called Feed. Feed is the one that most of us are probably going to be most familiar with. That basically displays the blog or the web page in the way the author really wanted you to see it. So it's essentially what's in the RSS feed, including pictures, including ads, all that kind of stuff. But the Readable and Feed tabs are a little bit more interesting. The Readable tab essentially strips down everything except the article text and any relevant pictures. So no ads or other material that aren't really part of the article. This is really my favorite view is the Readable ad because you get beyond all the junk and you just get at the content. The Link is just the opposite of the Readable tab, and that essentially shows you the entire web page in which that blog post or article sits. So you can kind of see the navigation, the header for the site, all the, you know, again, any ads that are on it, any embedded videos, other articles that might interest you as well from that same website. So that is, those three tabs essentially allow you pretty much to fine-tune your reading experience. There's a couple other settings, and these are not related to that Google Super Google Reader add-on, so you could take advantage of these, whether you're actually using Chrome or anything else, Firefox or Internet Explorer, Safari. One of them is a sort by magic feature. If you click on the View Settings item in the menu that sits right above all the feeds, you have a number of options for sort. Sort by newest, sort by oldest, and then sort by magic. And it kind of sounds like that I'm feeling lucky button that you see on the mm-hmm. Google search. You're not quite sure what it does, but it does something magical, let's say. And it does really work. Basically, it tries to predict what you're most interested in. And the only time I use this is if I've been away from Google Reader for a few days. And because I subscribe to so many feeds, I'll easily have 1,000-plus articles, you know, wow, in my feed reader. And there's no way I'm going to, you know, go through 1,000 articles. So what I do, rather than sorting by oldest or newest, which isn't going to be all that helpful to try and get through 1,000 articles, is I check this sort by magic button, and it essentially tries to predict what I would be most interested in based on my previous reading history. So what feeds I've added, what I've shared, what I've liked or tagged, it remembers all that stuff about me, and it says, oh, you seem to like or gravitate towards these kinds of articles. Here are some more of those kinds of articles, and it pushes those to the top. And I found it to be very accurate in trying to predict that. So that really helps. And then what I do is, you know, I'll read the first 100 of those or however much I have time. And then there's another button that's across the top that everybody should be aware of, and that's mark all as read. So that when I click on that, it totally wipes everything out, and I can start from scratch in essence, once I'm pretty confident that I've got what I needed, and then I go from there. And then the final tip, Sally, that I think everybody should be aware of is a keyboard shortcut, a couple keys that are really helpful in moving through all of your articles in your reader, and that's the J and K keys. And they're right next to each other on the keyboard. The J key moves you forward one article. The K key moves you back. So it acts as a toggle, so you can keep going, hitting the J key, moving through your articles down the page. Or if you wanted to back up, you hit that K key. It's just a lot better than trying to find that button at the bottom of the screen that basically allows you to advance or move back, you know, through the articles. So those are just a few of the things that I do to try and make my time within Google Reader even more productive. It is a productivity tool in general, but I think there are just a couple tweaks that can make it even better.
Wow. I'm taking notes here, Martin. You did good with this blog post. You taught me some magic and J and K keys. I haven't experienced the plugin yet. I'm going to have to go get that from my Chrome browser. But I take it that you do a lot of your reading in the browser, not in an offline kind of third-party tool or even on the iPad or whatever. You're more of a browser kind of guy?
I do use Flipboard on the iPad.
Sure.
But I think most of the heavy duty stuff I do here, mostly because it's easier to share and I can use Digo with it and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Not as easy on Flipboard. When I don't have my iPad, I just have my iPhone, I still use the Google app, the Google Reader app, and I do miss some of these features because you're very much limited. Mm-hmm. So I don't do any heavy duty stuff there. If I'm really interested in getting up to speed on what I've missed and things that might be appropriate for the podcast or appropriate to share on Twitter or whatever, I definitely go to the browser version, and it's just because of some of these features that make it, you're a lot more productive, you know, in essence. So that's really what the article's about.
Definitely.
How about you? Where do you do most of your reading?
I would say most is early morning on the iPad now. It used to be on my mm-hmm. iPod. And I like the Flipboard view, but I still like a news reader yep. for my reading. And I use one called NewsRack, which there's a million RSS readers. Yep. But I like NewsRack. I can easily mark things red if I want. I don't think in Flipboard that it necessarily marks it as red.
There's a setting that if you view it, it marks it as red.
Okay.
It kind of dims the headline. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll have to look for that setting. But, yeah, I'm kind of a mixture. I do like, and it's one of the tabs you said was most like the current Google Reader, the feed kind of look, mm-hmm. where you can see everything at once, because many times I don't read the 1,000 articles that are stacked up there. I just read the titles and a little snippet, and I can determine which ones I'm interested in with that kind of view. So,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of a mashup effort, and I just love my RSS feeds, and I'm always learning something new from them, yep. and you know, excited to have new ways to do that.
I've tried the list view within Google Reader, which is just the one-line title. Mm-hmm. So you can obviously get 30 or 40 on a page and just quickly scan that. But I found that it's difficult without at least seeing the first few lines to truly know what the article's about. That's kind of why I like Flipboard, too. You get a little bit of an excerpt from it, and that's helpful to me. So I can quickly, using the J and K keys, you know, really go quickly through, you know, a bunch of feeds, and then still get at least the, you know, a screen full of, you know, the most relevant data. So good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll move on then.
With community feedback. Mm-hmm. And we did have a couple of Digo links to share. I'm sure there'll be more for next week's show, as we've been away from the microphone quite a bit with our traveling and everything. But this week we have a link to the Internet Archive Wayback Machine. I don't know how many people are familiar with the Wayback Machine, but it does come in handy at times if you want to go back in history and see what a website used to look like. You can type in a URL here, and it will show you archived versions of a particular website.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with someone recently, and circumstances were such that their original church website had been lost. They even have gone with a new domain name and everything and cannot get any access to the people that originally managed the site or gone from their congregation, can't get access to the data that was there. They had put a lot of effort into that website, and they just really wanted to be able to look at it and see what was there so they wouldn't have to reinvent the wheel with their new website they were developing. And at the time, I thought, wow, there's just no way for me to help you get mm-hmm. access to that old site. And then I remembered the Wayback Machine, which is part of archive.org. And we were able to bring up the website and navigate around it from these archived versions of it. You don't always get all the graphics and things right. that are on the site.
A lot of the content is there. Yeah.
Yeah. Text content is there. So it may save the day for you someday. You might want to just tag a link to it somewhere in your social bookmarking or whatever, and keep it in mind if you want to go back and look at history somehow.
Very good.
And then next up, just a quick link to a Social Media Examiner blog where they listed a post about top 75 apps for enhancing your Facebook page. Martin, you and I have talked in the past about having a landing page. We actually have one of those for the Wells Tech fan page on Facebook, and using Facebook markup language. And I know Facebook is changing as to how you can do different programming and things, but there are a lot of different applications that may make it easy and creative to do some neat things on your Facebook page. And I thought this was a good compilation blog post that listed quite a few of those, may give you some ideas for your congregation or school Facebook page.
Ton of resources. You're almost overwhelmed looking at this yeah. blog post. You're not quite sure, you know, where to start, because you can do almost anything, it seems right. like, with some of these apps. So really
maybe
customize.
Maybe if you have an idea,
page.
You can find an app there to do it.
Absolutely. Yep.
And then just to share, an e-newsletter came out recently from .sub, and it's been quite a while since we've talked about .sub and what that website is all about. The URL is pretty simple. It's .sub.com. So you spell out .dotsub and then a dot and then .com. And what it does is it allows you to add subtitles to any online video. And so obviously great for the hearing impaired. It also allows you to translate into many, many languages with your subtitles so that your video efforts can reach those who speak a different language than you. So lots of potential here with .sub. They do have an iOS app, so you can get .sub videos on your iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. And just lots of cool things going on with their interface and videos that they're posting there. So check out .sub.com.
Nice. I had forgotten all about that site till you mentioned it again, Sally. It's nice. Good resource. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that should about do it for this week's edition of the Wells Tech Podcast and our Wells Hacker series. A little bit lighter fare for your summer. Hopefully it's useful. And we'd love to hear your tips and tricks as well. So please contact us through the traditional methods. And there are many of them. WellsTech.wells.net is the website. Or the show notes page where you can add a comment and contact us, find all other ways to contact us, including our email, wellstech@wells.net. We got Facebook and all that social media stuff we got going. So no excuses for not being able to get in touch with us. So hope to hear from you. All right, Sally, let's close the show with the music of In His Service from their album In His Time, Jesus, Lover of My Soul. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Hope to talk with you next week.